What makes someone believe they should lead a nation? In 1966, a boy was born into the kind of privilege that typically breeds either entitlement or guilt. David Cameron would choose neither path. Instead, he'd forge something more complex, a political identity shaped by personal tragedy, pragmatic conservatism, and an unshakable belief that he could modernize his party and his country. His father, Ian, born with severely shortened legs and deformed feet, worked 40 years in finance without complaint, teaching young David that circumstances don't define capability. His mother served as a magistrate for 3 decades, embedding the notion that privilege demands public service. These weren't abstract lessons. They became the foundation for a political career that would culminate in Britain's most consequential decision since World War II. Cameron's journey from Eton to Oxford to the Conservative Research Department in 1988 immersed him in what he calls a strange mixture of intelligence service, policy workshop, and academy. Witnessing Thatcher's dramatic 1990 fall taught him how quickly political fortunes reverse. Working with John Major on Prime Minister's questions revealed parliamentary combat's brutal mechanics. His Treasury stint during the exchange rate mechanism crisis forged his euro-realist stance, skeptical of European integration without hostility. By 2005, when he became Conservative leader after 3 election losses, Britain had grown more urban, diverse, and socially liberal. The Conservatives had just 17 women among 198 MPs and only 2 from ethnic minorities. Cameron appointed more people named David to his shadow cabinet than women, an absurdity that galvanized his modernization drive. He embraced Thatcher's core principles, market economics, personal responsibility, strong defense, while recognizing Britain had changed. His Arctic Husky trip signaled a Conservative Party applying free market principles to environmental challenges. In April 2002, Ivan Cameron was born with Otahara syndrome, a rare condition causing uncontrollable epilepsy and severe developmental delays. The Cameron home transformed into a medical facility, with David carrying his son everywhere while his political career accelerated, and Samantha coordinating carers and emergency visits. On February 24, 2009, Ivan died after massive organ failure. Gordon Brown, who had lost his own daughter, led parliamentary tributes with genuine warmth that transcended political rivalry. This tragedy reshaped Cameron's priorities. He became a passionate NHS advocate, understanding viscerally what healthcare means to vulnerable families. He later established the 100,000 Genomes Project, keeping the first sequenced genome on his number 10 desk, a reminder that science could spare other families his anguish. Ivan's life taught Cameron about unconditional love and Britain's capacity for compassion. His death taught him that some losses never heal. They simply become part of who you are. The 2010 election forced Cameron into coalition with the Liberal Democrat Nick Clegg. Their Rose Garden press conference promised a new politics, prioritizing national interest over party advantage. Britain's deficit approached peacetime records, with debt to GDP projected at 75% by 2015. Labor's growth had masked fundamental problems. 70% of new jobs went to foreign workers, welfare dependency soared, and prosperity concentrated in finance and London. Cameron and Chancellor George Osborne deployed monetary activism through low rates, supply-side reform by slashing corporation tax and regulation, and fiscal responsibility critics labeled austerity. From early 2012 through mid-2013, Cameron endured political agony as the economy stagnated. By mid-2013, vindication arrived. Growth hit 0.6%, employment reached records, and Britain soon outpaced every G7 nation. The top 1% of earners contributed more income tax than the bottom 75%. Cameron learned that politics requires not just right policies, but the willingness to endure criticism when you believe you're correct. Despite economic constraints, Cameron pursued ambitious reforms. Education became his passion. With Michael Gove, he expanded academies and introduced free schools, allowing teachers, charities, and parents to establish institutions outside bureaucratic control. They reformed teacher training through School Direct, putting schools in charge rather than universities. University tuition fees rose to $9,000, but students paid nothing up front and only began repayment when earning $21,000. By 2017, students from low-income families were 30% more likely to attend university than under Labour. Then came equal marriage, the reform that defined Cameron's social liberalism and infuriated traditionalists. He believed love is love, commitment is commitment, regardless of sexuality. He framed it in conservative values. I don't support gay marriage despite being a conservative. I support gay marriage because I am a conservative. Marriage strengthens society. Why deny it to loving couples based on sexuality? His big society philosophy aimed to nurture citizen responsibility alongside state action, creating Big Society Capital, the world's first social investment bank. Environmental commitments remained strong. Britain's carbon emissions reached their lowest level since 1894. By Cameron's final year, renewables generated 25% of Britain's power, exceeding coal for the first time. On January 23, 2013, Cameron announced a policy that would reshape Britain, renegotiate the UK's EU relationship, then hold an in-out referendum. His logic seemed sound. The EU was changing rapidly due to the Eurozone crisis, and better to control the referendum than let a successor government recommend leaving. Between May 2015 and February 2016, Cameron embarked on the biggest diplomatic tour in recent British history. The final deal achieved significant reforms, reversing a key Treaty of Rome tenet, repatriating powers, redefining worker in EU law, and protecting the pound and City of London. But Cameron had allowed expectations to become dangerously high. What he delivered as meaningful concessions, critics dismissed as cosmetic. The referendum campaign exposed deep conservative divisions. Cameron was devastated when Michael Gove and Boris Johnson backed Leave, two influential figures whose support legitimized Brexit. He believed Johnson ultimately risked an outcome he didn't believe in for political advantage. On June 23, 2016, Britain voted to leave 52% to 48%. Cameron's career ended instantly. How could he credibly deliver a policy he fundamentally opposed? Cameron's final Prime Minister's questions capped 6 years addressing 5,500 questions. He concluded encouraging MPs' constituent service, noting nothing is really impossible if you put your mind to it. His tenure transformed Britain's economy from worst peacetime deficit to fastest G7 growth, creating 2.5 million jobs and enabling a million new businesses. Reforms placed 1.4 million more pupils in good schools. Equal marriage made Britain fairer. Yet Brexit overshadows everything. Cameron's pragmatism, his belief that EU membership was a practical question solvable through renegotiation, fatally underestimated the emotional power of sovereignty and identity. He assumed economic arguments would prevail. They didn't. His centrist approach modernized his party, but left him vulnerable to populist forces rejecting compromise for ideological purity. The deepest irony, Cameron's greatest strength became his fatal weakness. His confidence in managing complex challenges, coalition government, Scottish independence, EU renegotiation, reflected genuine ability. He'd succeeded repeatedly where others predicted failure, but confidence shaded into hubris. The Brexit referendum was a gamble too far, ending his career and setting Britain on a path of continuing turmoil. Cameron's story reminds us that in politics, our greatest victories and deepest defeats often spring from the same source, the audacious belief that we can shape our nation's destiny.